Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today for our Real Estate Operations Master's Series. Today's topic is one we've been hearing a lot about from clients in this current economic climate, and that is best practices for a preventive maintenance program. I think we can all agree that comprehensive PM is a fundamental part of building management and, more importantly, preserving NOI. There's a study by Jones Lang LaSalle that says that an organization that adheres to structured PM will experience a 545% return over time. That sounds great in theory, but the problem is most organizations either don't know how to get started or are using an outdated system of PM that relies on their engineers going into offices and thumbing through outdated catalogs. And the problem with that is it usually leads to more breakdowns and breakdown maintenance rather than an actual proactive PM program. The excuse we hear a lot from people in the industry and our own clients is either lack of time or lack of money. And buildings are busy, and it can seem like you're overwhelmed, and the thought of redoing your PM program or putting the time and effort into that can sometimes seem overwhelming. But as Tony Shaker is going to speak to, with a little effort up front, you can establish a proactive culture of maintenance that in the end is actually going to save you time and money. My name is Sarah Fisher, and I'm the Marketing Communications Director at Building Engines, and we're the sponsor for today's presentation. This webinar is part of our regularly scheduled series called our Operations Masters Series, where we look to bring thought leaders to give presentations on expert content that is important to you in the building and facilities operations community, and these are always free of charge. We are pleased and fortunate to have with us today Tony Shaker, founder and CEO of Enfinity Partners. Tony's been in the facility services business for over 35 years. He has significant experience developing strategic operations and maintenance programs for the building community, and that includes commercial retail, government, higher educational facilities. He owned his own company, which he started based on PM and energy. And after selling those companies, he's opened up a new facility. It's a boutique energy building that takes into account issues of energy as well as PM as it relates to energy consumption in buildings. And now, without further ado, I am pleased to present Tony Shaker.
Okay.
Tony, as we look at the topic of preventive maintenance, where should we start? What's the first steps that you can have people take today?
I think probably at the highest level, I would comment that PM, while considered to be fairly fundamental, isn't clearly understood. The comment that I would make to that point is you need to ask yourself, do I understand what am I doing, not just doing it? Or in other words, what are we trying to accomplish? To this point, when you're looking at conducting preventive maintenance on the assets within your facility, we're doing it for two basic reasons. We're doing it to prevent failures, and we're doing it to maintain or even extend the asset's life cycle, meaning that we've got significant dollars invested in the facility itself. And we're looking to maintain the estimated life cycle of that equipment. There are basically five components of a solid PM program. A comprehensive job plan or task list for each asset. An annual master plan with estimated labor and material components. An inventory of emergency spare parts. Tools and equipment to accomplish the PM tasks. Most importantly, train technicians to perform the assigned work in a professional and safe manner. The first being a comprehensive job plan or task list for each asset. When I refer to a comprehensive job plan, I'm referring to not just a checklist, but a group of tasks that indicate what the condition of the equipment is and measuring it against that, such as having pressure range scales, on pumps as another example, or pressure drop across the filter bank or coils. So those are the things that really tell us what we're doing. So in addition to the checklist, we're looking for some very strategic components to determine how well the equipment is truly performing. Another point is having an annual or master plan with estimated labor and material components to accomplish the work. Many people argue that I am too busy to do the preventive maintenance. However, it should be routine and understood, meaning that when you develop the annual plan, you have an estimated labor component. And that way, you can judge the amount of work your staff is doing or needs to do during the course of the year, in addition to what I'll refer to as unscheduled maintenance or unscheduled work orders that come in from the tenants within the facility. Another point is, in order to conduct the PM properly, is to have an adequate inventory of parts. In particular, emergency spare parts. Emergency spare parts should be inventoried, part of the program, and only for those areas that would be considered emergencies, such as data center equipment or whatever is required within that particular building to keep the building going for it, so it's productive for the company. Another point, and I see this all the time, is truly having the tools and equipment to accomplish the tasks. If you have the tools, they can be put in carts, they can be put in kits or other configurations that allow the technician to do the work properly. Lastly, and I think this is extremely important, is train technicians that perform the assigned work in a professional and safe manner, meaning that these technicians, whether they are trained on day one or not, they could be led around by a senior individual explaining to the individual how to perform the work, or there's plenty of off-site or on-site training programs that are available to companies to train the technicians to do the work in a workmanlike manner. So with those five components, what we've really said is we're taking care of the assets within the building so that we do not have failures or reduce failures and maintaining the life cycle of the equipment.
Okay, so why aren't people doing this today in general, would you say?
Well, I think there are several reasons that people do not do PM work. The first, and the one that I hear most, is we don't have time. That adage really can't be supported. The idea of not having time means that you're doing something else. And my suspicion is you have so many unscheduled work orders to accomplish, you do not do the PM. The unscheduled work orders are probably equipment failures, or in many cases are equipment failures. And if you did the work, did the PM, you would not have those failures. So the argument of not having enough of time, it really isn't supported very well. The second reason is PM costs money. And my argument is, yes, it does. But the money is well spent, meaning that you are maintaining the asset, so you have less equipment downtime, which ensures the productivity of the facility. The third, and this is the one that probably has some good reason to it, is I don't have the labor to accomplish the work. My argument is, if you do the annual master plan, it will make a determination how much labor you do need and when that labor is needed. With that, you have a strategic argument either to ask for more labor from your superior or rearrange your staff so that the functions in the preventive maintenance program are in fact accomplished on time.
So Tony, who is typically responsible for defining a preventive maintenance program as well as all the goals that surround that?
Well, generally speaking, it would be the facility management people. But in many cases, they don't think about a program. They think about something that came across their desk or something they picked up in a training session or something they learned from their peers. My argument is that doesn't get you to where you go. You need to sit back and analyze where I am today. Simply done is to profile the use of your energy using your monthly bills over a 12-month period. Certainly profile them for usage, profile them for demand, profile them for cost. Once you know where you are, you might want to consider, and this is what I support, is benchmarking where you are against industry standards. Industry standards are readily available for any number of facility management organizations. Now, if you recognize that I am performing or using energy at a higher level than the benchmarks would indicate, that's when you should absolutely take a good, strong look at what is going on in my building? How is it being operated? What's the condition of the equipment? How am I buying my power? And answering the question, should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? Again, with in mind, you have a goal to reach. And that goal could be over a year, could be over several years. All depends on what the issues are, what they're going to cost, what the ROI is, and what the management of the facility will allow you to do. All of those are components that you need to take into consideration.
Thanks, Tony. Now what I'd like to do is connect how important it is to be able to go online, and that means bringing your whole PM program online. And if you could speak a little to, you know, how important it is to be able to go online to the manufacturer, say, and see all the important equipment info up to date and in real time, and also the importance of kind of having your task list online and having the master plan and documentation online. If you could speak to that a little bit. And then I think the other thing we're starting to see is a mobile trend and, you know, how most of the team is outfitted with mobile devices. And if you could speak a little bit to that and how that plays into kind of getting your information in real time and going online.
Well, it's customary for people in the facilities business to have rows of catalogs within their office or within their workshop so they can refer to them. Quite often, those catalogs are not updated because the representative of that particular company doesn't feel that he has the time or can or will come in and update the equipment that you have there or the data for the equipment you have there. By providing a link on the tasking sheet to the manufacturer is easily done. It's nothing more than their web address. With their web address, you can recognize what work needs to be done, how it needs to be done, and you can also order parts or contact the manufacturer with specific issues that you might have that are on those three components. When we talk about the components of a PM program, it certainly goes beyond the issue of a task list or a job plan. Certainly, we should have an equipment history. So not only does it say that we've done the work, but also said if there's any corrective work done on that asset or group of assets, that there's a history of it. So it's reflected next time I do my PM. The next piece of it is really having an inventory by asset of the materials that you believe are required to do that work properly. Now, there's ways of doing this that would yield a task list or the three components that I've just mentioned to you on a desktop or laptop computer, if that is what appeals to you, or if you had mobile devices that would give you the same information, you could conduct it and send the information, conduct the PM, and then send the information back to the database to update the database that the work was either done or have changed the inventory, or even if I've done some corrective work. One of the advantages of having a mobile device to do this is, first of all, you have a record that's not a paper document. That document will, in fact, update everything within the system. Two, it'll tell you that you have an order or a work order to do a specific amount of work or type of work, which, in fact, updates it. And you don't need to come back to the office or the workshop to be given another work order. You can clearly do the work and be more efficient by doing one job than simply going to another job without having to come back to the office. The other piece of it, with the link on your mobile device, you can contact or download information from the manufacturer, for one. And two, there should be a list of parts and tools that you will be required to do the work efficiently. And that, too, should be on the screen of your mobile device. Now, in my view and in my experience, this is happening all the time now in efficient preventive maintenance facilities. The technicians are trained to operate their mobile device and actually see the view of being able to do a job more efficiently by having a mobile device as opposed to coming back and picking up a piece of paper, checking it off, and returning it to the office. So we go beyond the task list, but we have more information, we complete the work more efficiently, and we've updated all of our records to port what we've done automatically through the mobile device.
Tony, we're seeing a move today from these periodic sets of activity to actual real-time action in preventive maintenance. I would like to get your input on how you see this trend evolving.
Well, I think the key word here is real-time, meaning that when you pick up that mobile handheld, or in fact if you're using a desktop or laptop, you punch in an address, and you have access to an enormous amount of information. The information to perform the task, you find out what the equipment history is, so you can provide budgets if you need to be. You'll know what's in inventory if I need to do the work. So the business itself is not, let's say, archaic, but very advanced, especially for sophisticated systems that require you to do more sophisticated work in a shorter period of time. To be more efficient, you really need an integrated program to conduct a preventive maintenance. And now the efficiencies come because I've got several databases that I can reach into for information. The databases are automatically updated when I do work. And so that all helps the technician to get the work done, as opposed to poring over catalogs or calling a vendor or trying to make decisions that he shouldn't be making, or seeking a professional response or a good technical response before making adjustments that are outside the scope of his work. Now, when I come back and talk about those five components, or certainly one of them, and that's train technicians to perform the assigned work. Training, while many people believe that training is an expense that we can't bear, training is readily available to you today over the internet. One view of it is to put a link into each one of the job plans or tasks lists that links you up with the manufacturer of the equipment or that specific piece of equipment. When you do that, you can be online following directions on how to perform the work, ways to do the work, or just as importantly, how to order parts for something that may have broken during the course of operation. So training today is readily available. Another consideration training is particularly for group training, small or large, would be to contact the manufacturer who in many cases will come right to your site, perform the technical training in front of you or your group at the piece of equipment that you're specifically looking for training on. This has been going on for years, in particular with building automation systems, heavy equipment like chillers and boilers, and the same can be done for variable speed drives, variable boxes, pumps, and things of that sort. So training, while considered daunting at times, it is very easily accomplished by the methods that I've suggested. Trained technicians are truly part of a culture that is saying that I don't want to be reactive. I want to plan what I do every day. No different than coming to work every day and going home in the evening. You're scheduled to do it. It makes sense to you, and that's why you do it. The issue of being overreactive really takes into the issue or the subject of the unscheduled work orders. And those are for things that are outside of the PM program. So, you know, in essence, we start off with a leadership issue. We start off with a cultural issue, meaning that you need to recognize what we're really trying to accomplish with the PM program. And as I mentioned earlier, preventing failures is key. The second one is maintaining or even extending the asset's life cycle is also key. If the leadership understands these two components or subjects, then you will have a planned, well-thought-out program of maintenance within the facility. In the first area of equipment or systems, being more sophisticated than they were some years back or even from year to year, today, we may be performing PM on an electronic board within the control system of a piece of equipment versus going in and greasing and oiling or changing belts. So when we talk about trained technicians, it's critical to understand that systems are advancing and the technicians themselves need to advance and make training available to them to do it. Now, in the area of where we are at today, certainly the pressures of today's economy are affecting how well things are done. With a good understanding of equipment, one might consider using a level of predictive maintenance to determine when the maintenance may be done. As an example, many people think that changing filters 4 times a year is very adequate. However, if by simply adding pressure drop components to a filter bank, one might recognize that I only need to change the filters twice a year, and therefore reducing cost as well as the inventory of materials to do the work.
Okay, so Tony, what we're really talking about is risk management. How would you say that fits into preventive maintenance considerations?
I've experienced any number of facilities that believe that breakdown maintenance is the maintenance program that they practice. I'm not a believer in that. First of all, by having an adequate PM program, studies have shown you'll reduce your energy by 10% or more. Two, you're preserving that the life cycle of the equipment, which can be very costly going forward. And two, you're guaranteeing to some point the productivity of the environment that that piece of equipment or groups of equipment serve. So the idea of not having a PM program really doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, even within the PM program, if we're looking to reduce risk, it's not just time-based maintenance, but in fact, considering doing predictive maintenance. Predictive maintenance for certain assets, examples would be oil testing, effects of water treatment, vibration testing. So when you take those into consideration, you're saying, I am doing these things, but I've noticed a degradation of the oil, which will affect the equipment, or water treatment, or even vibration testing on heavy equipment, such as water chillers and big fans and cooling towers, that would suggest that the motor is going out of alignment, or the frame is broken, or we have bad bearings. Those are the things that, in fact, can reduce things even beyond the area of time-based preventive maintenance. And my suggestion is, wherever possible, these are the types of things that you should be looking at. In consideration of all of that, you look at your facility, time-based maintenance is something that is acceptable. But as an example, you may be in an environment, a working environment, that the conditions are such that the equipment degrades all by itself because of, as an example, salt water, or as an example, you're operating more hours than you would normally do in your particular area of the country. So the idea of looking at things beyond the task sheet is, or refining the task sheet to accept those kinds of thoughts, is very important to reduce risk. Well, you know, one of the foundation of all of this, whether you do your PM manually or it's computerized or you're using software as a service, is you really need a list of all of your equipment and all of the critical components. AC1 is not AC1. AC1 is manufactured by. It's got a coil size. It's got a motor. It's got a motor horsepower. It's operating at a certain voltage. It may require a certain kind of lubricant, size of belt. What does it serve for those critical areas within your facility that you might consider to be an emergency, so you can make a determination what kind of spare parts I have? So the very beginning is really to collect all of the equipment information. And in my experience, that's what people have the greatest difficulty doing. It's either time or not understanding it. And, you know, there's alternatives to you doing it is by taking someone else, a provider as an example, to come in and collect that equipment. And once that equipment is collected, now you can start building a program of tasks and time-based maintenance, building in predictive maintenance, and making a determination whether you want to be computerized or you want to do it manually. In today's world, to me, it makes absolutely no sense to do it manually. With the databases for parts, equipment history, and tasking, having multiple databases either on a mobile unit or a central station or using software as a service is truly the better way to perform maintenance in today's more sophisticated world. Everybody's heard the story, and people have heard the story before in many different ways, but I think the decision that is most important is to say to yourself strategically, what am I trying to accomplish, not just what am I doing? Again, that should suggest I want to have a comprehensive preventive maintenance program put in place. And that's going to be the foundation of my organization so that I can prevent failures and to maintain the assets to the life cycle that they were estimated at. If you can follow that rule, you will have accomplished the needs for maintenance within your facility.
Tony, thank you so much for providing us with some great insight into PM best practices. In a minute, we are going to open it up to Q&A. So if you have any questions for Tony, now's the time to start submitting them through your chat window, and he's going to address them in just a moment.
Looks like we have one question that came in, Tony, and the question is regarding training. And they ask, how frequently should you recommend holding training sessions for technicians?
Well, it's a pretty broad question, and I'm going to give a very broad answer as a result of it. Certainly, at the very beginning of a technician's, let's say, participation in the building, he should receive as much training as possible from someone working with him as PM is required, or even going off-site to get the training. But during the course of the year, what I like to see is to see monthly training sessions. Those monthly training sessions could cover PM items, they could cover safety items. The training, as a rule, shouldn't have to take any more than an hour per course. And that should be more than adequate for people to stay involved, to ask questions during the training session, and make sure they retain the information as they go back to their working hours. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you, Tony. We have a couple other questions coming in, and I have one that says, do you think that senior management is generally committed to PM program in commercial real estate?
Interesting question. Generally speaking, I believe that is true, because where, let's say, the management of the organization has a role to preserve the asset for the ownership, it's very important that PM be done to retain the value of the asset. So that needs to be understood, but my sense is, as a rule, ownership or general management does understand the frequency and the necessity of doing PM in a building.
Okay, thanks, Tony. And then this one might be a little difficult, but you were speaking earlier to kind of bringing the importance of bringing the process online and how that can be daunting. And so this question is for someone whose PM process is currently manual. What would be the very first step you could take, or what would be the first piece you would automate or bring online if you had to start somewhere?
Well, I would think if you're doing it manually today, I think you've got to make a decision how you want to computerize it. Meaning, do you want to have a program within your facility, or do you want to use a software as a service type of a program? All of them have their advantages. However, if you are going to be buying a program and keeping it on a desktop within your facility, you also need to recognize that you're going to have to maintain that software to some extent. Somebody needs to operate it. It doesn't happen automatically, just as you do when you have a manual program. Using software as a service, where there's multiple databases that are available to you all the time, you have someone updating, correcting, performing maintenance on the software, and you're doing a function of basically inputting it as well as receiving information. So having said all of that, I think the first decision you need to make is, where do I want to go? There's nothing lost with using software as a service, because you own the information. So if you feel that it's not working for you at a later time, you could bring it back to your facility. Or likewise, if you were developing it online on your own software or somebody else's software, you too could transfer it to software as a service in the future.
Thanks again, Tony. We're going to do one more question here, and actually before you answer that, I just want to let everyone know that we do have a lot of additional content on energy and as it relates to PM, which we didn't include in this webinar, but on the link to the microsite that you see on your screen, we'll have a whole section with additional documentation and more insights from Tony on that. So if Tony, you could answer, what type of equipment represents the biggest energy savings if maintained properly?
As a general rule, you got to look at the biggest consumers, whether it's a chiller or a cooling tower or pumps or air handlers. Now, while some may have the higher horsepower, some of them, some other pieces of equipment may be operating 24 hours a day versus a 10 to 12 hour operating time for facilities. Now, where I go with that is I look for the biggest horsepower first. Chiller is probably the one with the largest horsepower following that would be fans and pumps. So starting there, you can make some decisions. Where do I want to go? And then prioritize it. On the other hand, you also need to take a look at, you know, how does this facility operate? If I'm operating a data center, you know, the operational periods are pretty extensive compared to an office building. So there's a lot of places to start, but I would suggest taking a look at the biggest users, and those, generally speaking, are the biggest horsepower components.
Okay, thank you so much, Tony. That looks like all the questions that we have for today. So just in closing, I want to thank everyone for coming, and thank you, Tony, for your insights. And again, this is a significant topic, so we've created a microsite to provide you with additional information, articles, recommendations beyond what we've covered here. So be sure not to miss that. I'll be sending also a follow-up email that will contain that link. And also, just we have a great cast of experts joining us for our Real Estate Operations Master Series for 2011. So please take a moment on the microsite to review any upcoming webinars, and you can register for individual programs or the entire series. And again, thank you everyone for being here. If you have more questions regarding preventive maintenance programs, best practices, or implementation, please feel free to contact Tony Shaker directly or us at Building Engines. The contact information is on the slide in front of you. And thanks again, and we look forward to seeing you at our future educational webinars.